Okay, let's get it out of the way. Turnabout Intruder. Which I just makes me sad.
So yes. I'll start it off. It wasn't as bad as
rousing defense.
Well, no, it's not going to be a rousing defense. Okay. It's going to be my expectations were so low that it exceeded them. And this has happened a few times with other episodes. It doesn't always happen with episodes that I think are going to be bad, but sometimes it does, and it did with this one. Because I did think that the idea was interesting, and it just was very poor execution. And I could imagine...
Which idea?
So,
The soul-swapping Freaky Friday thing?
Well, I think the soul-swapping could have been a premise that they could have made into a good episode. And even the disillusioned female who can't be a starship captain idea is something that they could have explored. But the way that they were... The execution was very poor. And, I mean, and obviously the soul swapping is somewhat derivative of other things that they've done in Star Trek, but
hold on one second there. How is it derivative?
Well, it's not the first time that someone has...
Like Return to Tomorrow or something?
No, I'm thinking of...
The brain swappings?
Thinking of The Enemy Within. Obviously, it's not soul swapping, but it's...
Yeah.
Something has gone wrong with Captain Kirk, and...
Oh, I see. On a bigger level, yeah.
Yeah. The broader idea of that, and they're trying... And they need to... First of all, they need to figure out that there's something wrong, and then second, they need to stop him, and then we have some intrigue involving command, and... But that aspect of it could have been compelling, but they handled it extremely poorly. And then it would be interesting to see... What were the gender politics of the Federation, or at least what, you know, was there a glass ceiling that kept women from achieving? And if so, like what does that do to people when they're told that they are just not capable of doing what men can do?
Well, Rob, that's a good way to put it. One of the things, again, yeah, you can explore the soul swapping plot, or you know, the other way you can. Actually, I'm thinking now there are maybe even three ways you could go with this. Another way is the potential drama of just a revenge story.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, this sperm lover. You could go all retro and have it be kind of. Noirish Star Trek, where the girl from Kirk's past, who was dumped or whatever, things didn't work out. Just over the years, builds up such resentment and plots to kill Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
That's completely fine. Yeah, as a storyline. How it's done is, but really, yeah, you can.
I wouldn't say that would have been fine. By itself. So here's what I think.
Well, no, maybe not just by itself, but
because you would need some science fiction.
Yeah, premises. Obviously, if you had it just take place at the starbase or whatever like that, yeah, that would seem weird. But the aspect of the problem, like you mentioned, the glass ceiling, is it's only mentioned in a kind of a paranoid way,
mm-hmm.
And so. The problem it really gets into is that she has a resentment and says, I can't be captain, and your Starfleet doesn't allow women to be captains or whatever. That's the implication. No one ever really comes out and says, you're full of shit.
Well, and you know, that's the interesting thing.
That's the problem.
Because Kirk actually agrees with her when she says that. And she, right, you know, yeah. There's no room for female captains. He says, no, there isn't. And
There's some line about, you know, you could have done as well as any woman, You know, think there's all that. I mean, that's where the extreme misogyny comes out. And the again, it isn't just like, oh, she's crazy. You know, she could have done whatever she wanted to, but no, actually, it is kind of like what she's pissed about. She just went bonkers and did all this stuff.
Yeah, and well, you know, the thing that I was thinking about with regards to this episode is that the glass ceiling that they at least suggest in this episode, I mean, it really indicates that Starfleet is no different than our current military. Mm-hmm. In fact, maybe even, well, yeah, but
it's pretty retrograde, though. Yeah,
yeah, in terms of sexism. Mm-hmm. But then you turn that on its head and jump forward just 100 years, and things are completely different in Next Gen, and even more so as you go through DS9 and then on to Voyager. Mm-hmm.
We've been watching a lot of Next Gen again. One of the things that's funny is like most of the admirals are women, older women.
Yeah,
yeah. They've definitely
tried to, you know.
There's a leap in that dimension of it between the original series and Next Generation. You see that women are maybe not completely, but you're right. They you can tell they're making quite a bit of effort to show that there's gender equality in the Federation.
Well, and they actually have a black woman as a starship captain in one of the first season Next Gen episodes. I can't remember the name. It's the one where they start with a conspiracy thing, and mm-hmm. Picard has to warp over to some planet and meet with a bunch of other captains, and one of them is a black woman.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's difficult to tell with Turnabout Intruder whether there were good intentions that went awry, or whether it is a reflection of Roddenberry's, at least at the time, Roddenberry's sort of sexist proclivities, you know, where he was, in some ways, he wanted to show that women could serve alongside men, but only in a very subsidiary capacity, you know, that he was more interested in seeing women as sex objects, you know, a lot of the time than he was in seeing them as fully rounded characters.
Well, and he even admitted to that. I think I mentioned this before. I was at a Trek convention one time, and Major Roddenberry was there, his mm-hmm. wife, and somebody asked her about, you know, did Gene really, how did they put it? Did Gene really believe in equality or universal equality or quality among the sexes, something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And she said, yes, he did, except in his own marriage.
And I heard that quote, actually, yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, we've talked about those it's a CD now, but it was originally a record that was produced in, like, 1975, of interviews and recordings from conventions that Gene Roddenberry did, and he stated up front that it was talking about one of his post-Star Trek productions, that he would continue to use women as sex objects. But in all fairness, he was also would continue to use men as sex objects too. So, I mean, I don't know. The thing that we need to remember is that, especially by this point, Roddenberry was pretty much completely out of the picture.
Yes, but this is his
idea. Didn't he write this one, though, or he wrote the story for this one?
He wrote the story for it, but I don't know. I was so turned off by it that...
I can totally buy that at least the basic structure of this was by him. Even though, if He probably would have done a lot better job executing it.
Well, would that it had been executed.
Now, Rob, you're probably going to say that one of the things that is good about this one are the later, like, court scenes. Sorry. No, then there is the scene where Scotty and McCoy are conspiring in the hallway.
Yeah,
and they record him and play back
very poorly. Well, here's where we go. The whole how do they try to? First of all, how do they discover that it isn't really Captain Kirk, and then how do they have to confront the chain of command and overcome it? Which is a problem that the crew has had to face before,
definitely.
But here it's just handled so poorly because first of all, it's almost immediately that they sense that it's not really Captain Kirk or there's something wrong with Captain Kirk. It's like she doesn't get away with it. And I realize that we're talking about a condensed time frame, but Spock almost instantly just is like, nope, you're wrong. You're wrong, Captain. there's something wrong with you.
Nope.
And then pretty much downhill from there. And part of the problem too is, I mean, it's the screenplay or the teleplay, but it's also Kirk's portrayal of Lester inside his own body is so just exaggerated and
or you know the thing that oh there are so many you spend the rest of the night picking things apart.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the dialogue, it's mentioned that she had spent years learning the crew and the layouts and the way things work in the Enterprise so that she can, you know, fool everybody. And, right. And yet the way she acts, it gives her away so quickly. It's so bad.
She's not a worthy opponent. That's the
not even close.
And
the little bit with the incompetent doctor boyfriend is pretty awful. And
jeez, yeah. What's up with the casting in there? That guy,
he was really bad. I mean, it's a bad character too. But
the scenes
with the two of them are so bad.
So wooden. And what you mentioned the court martial or tribunal or whatever it is, it's so poorly presented. Like you have no idea who's in charge. You don't know.
Right. It's just suddenly okay. Here, let's have a court scene.
Yeah, who are the decision makers? Who can decide what's admitted and what's not? And it's just so it's like Captain Kirk being prosecutor. You know, it's really terrible. And confusing.
And at the very end, once everything has been figured out, it's basically like she basically had a bunch of people killed. And did all this stuff, and we'll just go put her. We'll just go let her go and do her thing. It's all good.
The guy who aided and abetted her.
Yeah, who probably was the one who actually carried out the murders back on the planet, said, that's okay. I'll take care of her.
I'll take care of her.
Because I love her.
Because I love her, right? Yeah, so poorly thought through and. Oh, what else was I going to say about how poorly handled it is?
One of the things that occurs to me is that you can make the case that Dr. Lester was insane. I mean, that's pretty clear. But, you compare that to the Ultimate Computer, however, and look at the way they handled Dr. Daystrom's insanity or paranoid schizophrenia or whatever it was that was his mental breakdown. And the thing that just that's a reasonable enough character trait, to. I don't know that it can carry the entire episode, but the thing that really bothers me is that what they suggest is that the symptom, the major symptom of her insanity or her mental breakdown is just absurd misogyny. And this coming from a woman.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's the way you... You make up for that. It's because, it's a woman saying all these things.
Well, I know, but that, it's a woman thing, it's one of those,
Yeah.
But, I don't know. To me, that is the worst part of the misogyny, anti-feminism, or whatever, you know, however you want to define it, of this episode, because, you know, the insanity was just a thinly veiled attack on women and feminism. I don't know.
And it was an opportunity to see Shatner in drag, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like if you don't accept the limitations of your of being a woman, then you're not going to be happy. This kind of
she could not be happy lesson. because of her gender.
Well, because she wouldn't accept
right
what it meant to be a woman. Right? It's like, and so it limits the freedom of women to decide what they want to be. And
yep.
You know, it's why it's
okay. Now let's look at this a second, because given what I just said, maybe there is some defense for this. Because when you think about it, we're talking about a specific character trait, and instead of going the route of, you know, a strong female character who says, "Yes, I understand and accept what, you know, the societal or societally imposed limitations on my gender, I'm going to fight against that and I'm going to succeed and do what I want." I mean, that's actually a very common theme in especially more recent, well, I mean, throughout literature. But instead, this particular character, they chose to go the route of, instead of her being this noble, heroic character who struggles against her bonds, she goes nuts. And the impetus for her going nuts is that she can't handle the limitations that are imposed on her because she's a woman. Is that flattering? No. Is it believable? Maybe.
Well, I think you can have sympathetic motivations for villains, basically, or people who do things that are wrong or evil, and that actually makes them more compelling and more interesting, and even a character you said compared her to Daystrom, and at the moment where he breaks down, and he says, you know, they called me
the boy wonder
who's past or whatever, past his prime or no longer has or something, you know, we understand where he's coming from there. His desire to matter again was what drove him to lose perspective. And so something we can all identify with. And yes, we can identify with her. If they'd set it up better, we could have identified with her frustration at not being able to achieve what she wants, you know, in this, even in the Federation, which is supposed to be so progressive. But yeah. They made it such a, they made her so unsympathetic in every other way, you know?
Right.
That they gave us an opportunity.
I mean, she was basically whining about her lot in life, and instead of doing something about it, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to take these limitations that are imposed on me, and I'm going to break them. I'm still going to do what they say I can't do. And instead, she went the other way and whined about it and gave up. And that doesn't make for a likable or a sympathetic character, but it doesn't mean that the whole thing was just was intended and designed to be misogynistic from beginning to end.
Yeah, I don't think it was. The intention behind, like I said, the intention behind it could have been a good one, in that it could have meant, the idea is that you could have had someone, like a lot of the antagonists that the Enterprise faces, they have sympathetic qualities and sympathetic motivations. And, you know, you see it in, like, Apollo, you know, who just wants someone to worship him. And is that so wrong, you know? And I
just wanted you to be my slaves and worship me. I mean, and you... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Rob.
No, but I think, but all the characters like that, they make the audience appreciate the attraction to them, you know. Or Khan is a great example. What makes Khan a great villain? You understand what makes him compelling and attractive to people. And,
well, and all that's true. I mean, I'm not disputing that the character wasn't, I won't even say that she wasn't well drawn. It's just that the character was inherently unlikable. And, you know, for broadcast television, that's a tactical blunder. Because, I mean, if you're, I guess you would call her the protagonist, and yeah, she'd be the protagonist. But if the protagonist is not only unlikable but pathetic, then you've missed part of the, you know, that basic formula for a good television show. I mean, it's not going to work. But my point is that, you know, in the run up to this episode, we were all decrying it, and, you know, oh God, it's so awful. And, you know, maybe I'm, and this has just come up to me just now, since we've been talking about it, but, and maybe I'm crediting the producers with more imagination and guts than they're due. A lot of the third season episodes would indicate that that's very true. But, you know, having a character like that who actually is realistic, who, you know, because we've all met people who are very shallow and pathetic. And there's not, you know, sometimes people just don't have much more motivation than that. And especially when you throw in the fact that she was, if not insane, at least, you know, seriously unbalanced. We wouldn't be having the same discussion. We wouldn't be talking so stridently about misogyny if it had been a male character. Because then, you know, it was just, well, I mean, we wouldn't have called this, you know, a gross example of misandry if it had been a male character. It would have been just, oh, well, you know, he's a pathetic character and, you know, there's not enough substance there to really comment on.
I think it's true, but the episode does tell us that this is, I mean, it presents it as her motivation. The inequality, the limitations on her abilities, and the exploration of gender roles is the premise of the one of the premises of the, or themes of the episode. And it's, you know, it's like it's of a piece with the other ham-handed attempts to deal with social issues of the day in the third season, like Let This Be Your Last Battlefield, The Way to Eden, where they seem to be proud of themselves for having addressed the subject, but do it in a really not very subtle and actually not very progressive way either. Like The Way to Eden is not very really that sympathetic to the hippies, mm-hmm. and this episode is even less sympathetic to feminism. And it, even though it introduces the topic or the theme of feminism, it shows you the limitations of Star Trek, the original series, I mean, that it just couldn't treat this subject with the kind of, you know, broad-mindedness that it did others, like racism or other kinds of...
You know, I don't know enough about the 60s to be able to tell for sure, but, and I mean, we all know how racial tension was such... racism and racial tension was such a hot button topic, a very serious social issue, and still is. But in a way, I don't know. From things I've seen and read, I think that maybe the sexism, really overt, gross sexism of the 60s was even worse than the racism. Or I mean, you can actually lump it all together for that matter, because it's just bigotry.
More, It was, but it was the sexism was a lot more tolerated and accepted in this at, in the '60s. And it was the '70s when feminism became the issue, the one of the primary issues of the day. And feminism sort of had its moment in the '70s. I mean, it had other moments too, but I think that explains a lot of the difference between the original series, this episode especially, and the Next Generation. The way that women are portrayed, the way that they are given, you know, the characters are so much more nuanced and balanced, and so I think, but I think it's true. The '60s, you know, a lot of these sort of revolutionary movements, you know, Black Power movements, civil rights movement, women were in a subordinate role, and they were often ignored, you know. And it was men who were the leaders or considered to be the ones who the focus was on.
Yeah.
And it reflects that. The show, it's a show that a series that we love and that we admire for being progressive, was just in that particular respect not very progressive. Although, you know, compared to other things, that other shows, you know, it probably was a lot more, you know, the fact that we have...
That they had an episode that actually dealt with sexism.
Yeah. That they actually dealt with it in other episodes as well, in which women, female characters are important, integral, you know, and their characters are explored in depth, and, you know, and I mean, you can't hold, it's the classic dilemma. It's like, what Star Trek is an outstanding series, you know, the original series is outstanding, and so what standard do you hold it to? You know, it's like, is it better than Green Acres? Well, yeah, of course it is.
But. Yeah. Well, you know, we could go on and on about this. Another thing, and maybe I'll address it in my write-up, is in terms of the misogyny, was her self-loathing, Dr. Lester's self-loathing, was that the cause of her insanity or the product of her insanity? It's kind of like the discussion we had about Daystrom, whether I guess it was paranoid schizophrenia, but was that something, the whole nature, I guess with him it was more nature versus nurture, but I just see that, you know, as which came first, what was the cause and what was the effect with Lester actually has a bearing on how overt the misogyny was and, you know, how it's portrayed. But again, I have a sense that I'm digging far deeper than this particular episode, the substance of this episode will support.
All right. Well, we should wrap it up. And
yep. Sounds good, so guys.
We can continue this conversation in the next podcast, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Well. And our next official one is going to be The Cage, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. That one should be a fun one.
And we can kind of do a little follow-up, too, based on this and the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
So we've actually made it to the end.
Yep. So we've looped back around.
We started this, what, 7 years ago?